Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. You walk your dog, you care for your cat, you scratch their tummies and pet them until the fur flies. But do you ever take the time to care for their teeth? Get ready for it, pet owners, but that's part of the deal. And it's one more reason why right now I don't own either a dog or a cat, because you've got to get down there and scrub their choppers, a job that's tricky enough for a dog, but for a cat, I can't even imagine. But February is National Pet Dental Health Month, so today we're talking dental care for your pets, and as usual, whenever Dr. Wayne Hunhausen is in the house, we'll take your questions about the quirky pet behaviors around your house as well. With us again is Dr. Wayne Hunhausen. He's owner of the Westwood Animal Hospital. He's a veterinarian and pet behavior consultant who's been working with pet owners and veterinarians throughout North America since 1982, and he's a regular here on our pet shows. Wayne, good to have you back.
Hey, welcome. Great to be here. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, too. Absolutely. Well, human and animals share the same concern when it comes to tooth care, the buildup of bacteria. Why is that such a problem?
Well, when you eat, you get the soft food forms a plaque on the teeth.
Yeah.
When we eat or the pet, our pets eat, it's the same process. And the plaque is not brushed off, then it becomes mineralized and it forms calculus or dental tartar. And as that builds up, tartar pushes the gums away from the teeth and allows bacteria and food particles to get down into the surrounding tissues around the root of the tooth. And you get root abscesses, infections, ultimately lost teeth.
You know, when I see a nature documentary, you know, featuring big cats or wolves, there's always at least one close-up of gleaming fangs. I have to say they look pretty clean and white to me. So what prevents plaque on their teeth?
Well, one thing that helps a lot is when they are feeding on their prey animals. They're chewing through fur, and that flosses a little bit and keeps things cleaned off. They chew on
never
bones.
Never thought about that before, yeah. Wayne.
They chew on bones, and the act of chewing through a bone, that pushes the plaque off the teeth also. Some of those things help out.
And that's really good. That's comforting to know. You're explaining this so well to me.
All the better to bite you, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And the other thing is they don't get ice cream and cookies as often as our pets do. And so that stuff is a lot worse. All the sugar and the teeth and the oral flora, that's not a good process.
They eat a lot more naturally than
yes,
we do.
Yes, they eat more naturally than we do.
How much of a role does diet play in dental care for your dogs or cats?
Well, it's really important. And dry food tends to push the plaque off the teeth more than wet food. Wet food tends to stick to the teeth. So for dogs in particular, dry food primary diets are really a good idea. Now, for cats, we recommended dry foods for years and years. Some of the more recent research have suggested that large population of cats really probably do better on moist food. So there's a balance there in regards to providing moist food that'll prevent some of the lower urinary tract diseases and other issues that cats have. Balance between that and keeping the teeth clean. And so that's why you have to help the pets along and brushing the teeth. Beyond brushing the teeth, and that's not easy for every pet. If a pet's not used to having people messing around with its mouth,
we're going to talk about that.
Yeah. There are other issues other tools that we can use to keep the mouth clean.
You know, the American Veterinarian Dental College is the governing body for pet dentists. Its website says there's some benefit to a dental-specific diet. This includes foods that employ a specific kibble design, and others include a chemical anti-tartar polyphosphate ingredient. How important is this consideration when you're at the store and you're picking out food?
It really depends on the pet. If you can brush, that's a gold standard. And brushing once a day could remove a considerable amount of the plaque and really slow down the tartar formation.
People really brush their dogs and cats' mouths once a day?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And people do it to themselves once a day, Wayne.
Well, I would hope they do.
Yes, you would hope. Yeah.
I would hope they do. But for pets that are difficult to pose more of a challenge for getting the teeth brushed, the kibble design and some of these prescription diets are really interesting. With regular kibble, when the dog bites into it, it crumbles. And with the kibble that's designed in these dental diets, even though it's a dry food, the outside of the kibble is harder than the inside. So when the pet bites into it, the tooth actually penetrates through the outside of the kibble, scraping the plaque off the teeth.
This is getting kind of scientific.
This is cool,
isn't
it? Yeah, it's really cool stuff. So that type of diet can be very, very helpful for pets that where the owner has difficulty brushing.
You know, the Dental College's advice on tooth care is pretty similar for dogs and cats. But what surprised me is what the college had to say about chew toys. Their use is recommended for dogs. But when it comes to felines, it says there's little publicly available information documenting the dental value of chew products for cats.
Well, the studies haven't been done, and I think one of the reasons the studies haven't been done is just the behavioral nature of dogs compared to cats. Dogs tend to be animals that get a lot of positive feedback and enjoy chewing on things. Cats, not so much. And you're not going to be – I think if you did the research, you're probably going to find out that you're not going to find any toys that are really helpful for cats because they typically don't gnaw on things.
Well, along those lines, Chris and Paola emailed us to ask, how many rawhide chewies 2 inches long should my 85-pound dog have in a day? He's a lab, a great white Pyrenees mix and loves them.
Yeah. Well, I actually, for the larger dogs, I prefer larger size rawhides. And I really would like something that the pet will actually gnaw on, and by gnawing on it, scrape the plaque off the teeth. For a lab that big and you give it a 2-inch chewy, it's probably going to be a couple bites and it's going to be gone. Uh-huh. And it probably doesn't get as much benefit from that as maybe a 5-pound Yorkie or Chihuahua would. The number, there's really no specific number. If the pet gets too many, it's more likely to upset its stomach and vomit. That might be one consideration depending on the individual pet. There's really no nutritional value to speak of in those. It's basically dried skin of a variety of different animals.
Yeah.
So, but I would go to a larger rawhide, I think, for a larger pet like that.
We're going to talk in just a minute about how to get your dog and cat accustomed to having their teeth brushed. But if you have questions in the meantime about the dental care of your pets, 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. You can also email us at updatedate@kcur.org. The Dental College endorses the Veterinary Oral Health Council's seal of acceptance. Is that a big deal? Should pet owners regard that as something important?
I think they should. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of products out there for pets that are supposed to do this and that. And really, if you go and look in the shelves, you don't really know if there's any kind of research behind that that actually will help the pet's teeth. And that's why this council was set up, so they can evaluate a variety of products and everything from dog and cat toothpaste to the special types of chews that are impregnated with chemicals that reduce plaque formation and reduce the bacteria in the mouth to these dental diets. They actually look at the research so they can, on their website, they can say, yeah, these are products we've looked at and we've done the research and these will help.
I love this. The Dental College says that cat owners can brush their pet's teeth, and it's very diplomatic in how it phrases advice on the topic. And I quote here, Wayne, cats can be reluctant to accept home oral hygiene and require a very gradual, gentle, and patient approach to achieve success. And I can only imagine. Most cats will allow their teeth to be brushed, but you need to take a very gradual and gentle approach. Start by letting your cat lick the dentifrice. Am I saying that right? Dentifrice from your finger. And
dentifrice.
From your finger, then off the small feline toothbrush. Then gradually place the brush in your cat's mouth and add the brushing motions. Introduction of this process may require daily activity over 1 to 2 months. Now, be honest with me, Wayne. Do you have cat owners who will take on a job of trying to indoctrinate their cat to having their teeth brushed or not?
Yeah.
I would not want to do that.
A few.
That doesn't sound like any fun to me.
A few. And reluctant to accept dental cleaning, that's a mild understatement for some cats.
Yes.
Now, if you start with kittens
and puppies. You always
say
that. Got to start them young.
If you start with young puppies and young kittens and you go really slow, like they recommend, and that's the key, going slow.
Like a little bit a day, gradually working.
Exactly. And really the key, if you're teaching a pet to tolerate dental brushing or grooming or any kind of physical interaction like that, is that you want to go so slow that you don't stress the pet, where the pet stops the interaction. And the the problem some people will have is they'll say, well, I got to brush the teeth, and they get right in with the toothbrush, and they brush and brush, and all of a sudden the cat's growling, or the puppy's kind of biting at the toothbrush, and then you have to stop. And then what that pet learns is not to tolerate and look forward to brushing. It learns, oh, I can be aggressive, and I can control what they do to me. And so that's a really key. The key is to go slow, do it for very short periods, and always stop before the pet stops you.
And what percentage of kitties will let you do something like that? I mean, we're talking half, or is it fewer than half?
I haven't looked at any studies, but I would say for certain it's, but cats is less than half. The other problem with cats and some of the small dogs like Chihuahuas is a lot of the plaque and dental in the tartar form for, accumulation occurs back in the molars in the back part of the mouth, and that's a really narrow area to get around, get into, and do, you know, get a lot of good done. Even with a really small pediatric toothbrush, sometimes it's really difficult to physically get it done. And so that's why for some of these really small pets, the dental diets, the dental, you can add, there are products that you can add to the water that help out. There are gels and sprays and other applications that you can apply to the teeth that are more easily accepted and readily accepted than brushing.
So if a cat or a dog is beyond puppyhood or kitty-dom, whatever those words are, I mean, should you really try, or is it just too late?
It's a good idea to try, depending on the pet. And, I mean, there are some pets that they're in the behavioral spectrum where they're not tolerant, they're reactive, maybe they're nervous, and oftentimes you can the owner has a good idea if they're going to get something done like that or not. If you have a more passive pet that's used to general handling, and if you go really, really slow, even older pets can learn to tolerate dental cleaning, brushing.
816-235-2888 is our phone number here, or you can tweet us at KCUR up to date. I also was struck that there's oral rinses and gels for dogs and cats. I mean, I can't imagine a dog sort of swishing his mouth out with some of this stuff and spitting it out. How does this work?
Well, they're applied either as a rinse that's squirted in the mouth, or gently sprayed in the mouth, or as a
– they swallow it then, right?
Yes, and which is – I'm glad you mentioned that, because if you're going to choose a toothpaste for your dog or cat, you want to pick one that's made for dogs and cats. Human toothpaste is not made to be swallowed. And if you're using human toothpaste and the pet swallows a fair amount of it, they're very likely they're going to spit up. And so, and also dog toothpaste and cat toothpaste, they don't have mint flavors, but they have liver flavors and fish flavors and other good things that the pets like.
So should you even try to use your Crest at home, or do you not go there?
No way. No, you don't.
You don't go there.
Right.
Yeah.
And you shouldn't use your dog's toothpaste either.
Yeah.
Unless you like liver.
Yeah. We had a call from Heather who called to say that her husband always asks why it costs more to clean a dog's mouth than a cat's mouth.
Well, the big difference lies in the fact that you have to put a pet under an anesthetic to do the job properly. And if you can imagine, it's not a dog or cat's not going to sit still when you have real sharp instruments in your mouth. I mean, I can hardly sit still when they're cleaning my teeth. And so it has to be done under an anesthetic. And so that increases the cost considerably. But the state-of-the-art in veterinary anesthesiology these days is really much forward and much better than it was 20, 30 years ago.
In what way? Yeah.
Much safer. We're using much safer anesthetics. We can use combinations of anesthetics for special needs pets that might have some kidney failure, which we might see in older pets, or maybe heart problems, so that we can do a lot more for pets and do it a lot more safely with the current anesthetics.
Huh.
And there's always a risk to being under an anesthetic, but for a routine procedure like dental cleaning, it's pretty rare that you see complications. Another thing besides the safer anesthetics we're using is most veterinary practices will recommend pre-anesthetic blood work, and we'll draw a blood sample for a small panel to make sure liver functions normal, kidney functions normal, so that we don't get any surprises during the anesthetic. And we'll run intravenous fluids during the procedure to keep the blood pressure up. And also, most practices these days have digital monitors. And so if a pet's under an anesthetic, just like a human under an anesthetic, the pet's going to be wired so we know what the blood pressure is, what the oxygen flow is in the blood. We run an EKG during the procedure. So we do everything we can to keep that procedure just absolutely as safe as possible.
So someone listening to this who hasn't cleaned his or her dog or cat's teeth in a long time, and is hearing you talking about the possibility of anesthesia, I mean, is it something, should they be thinking about bringing their pet in for a teeth cleaning if it's been a number of years? Is that just part of routine maintenance for your dog and cat?
It is.
And how long does it last?
It really depends on the pet and its diet and, you know, what hard food versus moist food versus a lot of treats that aren't healthy for the pet. And it depends on the metabolism of the pet. There are some pets I see, like cats that come in, two cats from the same litter, and I look at them for an exam, and one cat has a lot of tartar built up, the other doesn't. So it also has to do with the physiology of the mouth and the type of salivary secretions. The larger pets typically need cleaning less frequently than smaller pets. Dogs, Labradors and some of the other big breeds, some of those dogs might not need to have their teeth cleaned more than four or five or six times throughout their life. But some of the small dogs that build up the tartar very rapidly, they might need dental cleanings every 12 months. And the problem with the small dogs, as I mentioned, is it's not as easy to clean their teeth. Plus, the other issue that's a problem for them is they have such a small amount of bone and mouth structures that hold the teeth in place. And so just a small amount of gum inflammation and inflammation under the gum line will rapidly erode away the bone in that area. And we end up having to pull teeth from small breed dogs much, much more frequently than we do large breed dogs because of that. So it's even more important for these small dogs that the owners pay attention to what's going on. During the yearly exam, we examine the mouth and look for tartar built up so we can give recommendations.
Pam from Overland Park, you're on with Dr. Wayne Hunhausen. Pam, nice to have you. Good morning.
Thank you. I inherited a 10-year-old Bichon, and I looked at her teeth last night, and the vet has suggested that I have teeth removed. And she, you know, I'm old school. Where I grew up with Cockers, they lost their teeth a lot of us are old school in that, you know, they just would lose their teeth naturally. My concern is this. He wants to pull several, and it looks like they need them, and there's a redness at the gum line. And you just answered that question about, you know, what the prognosis of that is. What's the worst-case scenario if I don't do it? And secondly, how will it affect her chewing? Because she chews really well. I give her only dry food, and she chews really well. And my concern is that if I start pulling her teeth, it's going to really affect her ability to eat her food. Mm.
Okay.
Great questions, Pam.
Yeah, real good questions. One thing is that what you see in your pet's mouth in regard to tartar built up and gum inflammation is just the tip of the iceberg. And so there's a lot more nasty things going on under the gum line. And as the process progresses and you get bacteria down there and you get a lot of gum inflammation, the bacteria start become released into the blood supply, and you get a bacteria in the blood, and this can have serious effects on the kidneys, can have effect on the heart and other organs, and so that's
Like people,
exactly like people. And then the other thing is you know, I've been practicing for over 30 years now, and I was graduated in kind of old school where people said well, pets are stoic and they don't feel pain and don't worry so much about that, but that's not the case. And they have abscess teeth, they hurt just like our teeth hurt, and so that's another reason to make sure that those teeth are healthy. And if they're not, if they're the least bit loose, or you got a lot of inflammation, or you're starting to see roots exposed, there's probably some pain there, even though the pet's not overtly showing that. And that's another reason to keep them healthy and keep them increase the quality of life by pulling diseased teeth.
Okay, well, the gums are red, and I can see a real darkness in the teeth. Both are incisors, and that's why it concerns me, her ability to eat.
Yes, that was your other question. On dry food, most of the chewing is done with the molars. And so the front teeth, the large canine teeth, the fangs, those are important.
Right.
Those big, large canines, those are important for grabbing prey animals and holding on to them out in the wild. And then the small teeth are important for grabbing and pinching off pieces of meat. Those are small teeth. They have small roots. It's not uncommon that those are teeth that are lost. But as long as we've got an adequate number of molars in the back of the mouth for grinding and chewing dry food, most of these pets do perfectly fine.
Okay, thank you so much.
Good luck, Pam. Nice to have you.
Bye-bye.
816-235-2888 is our phone number here. William writes in, and he disagrees, Wayne. He writes this: this is just plain silly. Our cats never had a toothbrush in their respective 20-year lives. No issues and healthy enough to catch birds and mice into their late years.
They were lucky.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I can, you know, I could, we do dentals on pets two or three times a week probably,
mm-hmm.
and I'd say probably a third of those are cats, and some of them come in with some very serious dental disease.
Mm-hmm.
But you look at the cat population or the dog population or the human population, there are going to be some people that for whatever reason don't have as many problems as others, and some have more problems. And again, that has to do with diet, and it has to do with the individual's internal makeup.
We're going to be transitioning from dental care to just general behavior questions for your dogs and cats and other animals for that matter as well. So give us a call, 816-235-2888. Brittany from Kansas City, Missouri. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
Hi. I have two questions. The first is, are human toothbrushes okay to use on a canine? And the second question is, are black labs more prone to certain dental issues?
In answer to your first question, you can use human toothbrushes. I would use a medium soft bristle. You don't want to use anything that's too stiff that it might abrade the gums. But you can use human toothbrushes if it's appropriate size for the size of the pet. In Labrador, you could certainly use a human toothbrush. And then in regard to black labs and dental disease, I'm not aware of any studies that single them out as being at a higher risk for dental disease in other dogs or other labs.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you, Brittany. Okay.
All right, bye-bye.
Let's take a break, Dr. Hunhouse. When we come back, we'll talk a little more about dental care. Then we'll turn into overweight pets and general health of dogs and cats and a whole lot more. We'll take your phone calls and questions as well, 816-235-2888, or tweet us at KCUR UpToDate. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to UpToDate on KCUR. Well, Dr. Hunhausen, do you ever get on a dog owner's back for not brushing a dog molars, teeth, all that effectively? Like, you know, my dentist gets on me sometimes.
Yeah, I try not to get on anybody's back.
Yeah.
People are sensitive about their pets and the care that they provide. I think it's just the way I approach that is to educate people. I mean, that's really key, and I like to have the family is part of my team, so we work together with health issues. And most people, if you can sit down and if you don't, you just don't want to say, oh, these teeth are horrible, you're doing a bad job, they're mm-hmm. less likely to work with you. But if you can explain what's going on and what's going on, like we discussed, beyond what they can actually see and how important it is and what the downside is and not doing anything, most people care for their pet and they want to do what they can if they just understand what the needs are.
All right, let's go back to some calls here. Let's go to Keith from Kansas City, Missouri. Keith, you're on UpToDate with Dr. Wayne Hunhausen.
Thank you for the call. I have a lab mix, and she likes to chew on hard bones that we buy at the local pet store or like the kind of the rawhide type of bones, and she just tears them apart and chews on them. But it gives her horrible breath, and the kids will be like, oh, this smells like poop. And so anyway, I'm just wondering, you know, if there's anything that I can do to help her with her breath because she loves to chew on those things.
Well, there are a variety of rinses and gels that you can use. Usually the odor comes from bacterial activity on food products within the mouth. And so you might check with your veterinarian and see what your veterinarian has available or what could recommend for that. But you also might try different brands of rawhide and possibly be able to find some that aren't as offensive to the kids. Now, excuse me. There are some rawhide chews that are made specifically for dental health. Like there's a product we carry called CET chews. And those rawhide pieces have chemicals impregnated in them to reduce bacterial growth in the mouth. And those are healthy for the teeth and also reduce some of that odor. So that's another thing to look for.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Good luck, Keith. Regine offers some recommendations here for her dog's dental issues. She says, I found a dog food by science diet called Dental Care. It actually has the picture of a dachshund on it. The kibble is big and it did the job. No need for dental cleaning this year. I also have her chew on Nylabone and a daily one called Greenie.
Okay. The dental diet's an excellent idea. Greenies are a good product. There's scientific information to support the use of that for cleaning. Mm-hmm. The Nylabones I'm concerned about. Now, there are two types. There's the soft Nylabone that we usually provide for young puppies, but the traditional adult Nylabone is a chunk of very hard nylon. And if a dog kind of gnaws on it, then it's not too much of a risk, but some dogs will actually chomp on these things. They'll bite down hard, and we'll see dogs come in every now and then that have what are called slab fractures, where they'll pop off the side of a molar. It just flakes right off. And so most veterinary dentists and many veterinary practitioners don't recommend those anymore. The same thing can happen with the sterilized large knuckle bones. We used to recommend those quite frequently. And if dogs gnaw on them, that kind of pulls the plaque off the teeth. But if you have a dog that just bites down real hard, you can get slab fractures on those. Dr. McGee is a board-certified veterinary dentist here in town. He used to be part of our general practice team years ago before he became board-certified. He says, Wayne, if you take that toy and you slam it against your knee and it hurts, it's probably going to be too hard for the dog's teeth. So stick with the softer toys, Kong toys, and some of these other toys that are more rubbery but pretty solid or really safe.
Just for the record, you have dogs. Do you brush their teeth?
Very rarely, but I use Greenies and I use the rawhide and all the types of treats that help out. He's a big dog and the tartar formation is pretty slow.
Yeah. 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Let's go to Stella from Roland Park. Stella, you're on the show. Nice to have you.
Hi, thanks.
Hi.
I had a question about my golden retriever. She's 15 right now and she's had kind of bad breath her whole life. I've only fed her dry food, and I've tried some like tablets and gels, put on the teeth. And I assume, like in people, it's the tongue that makes the bad breath. And I'm just kind of wondering if her teeth might be the reason for her bad breath, or if it's something she's eating.
Certainly, there can be other sources of malodor in the dog's mouth besides the tartar that's building up in the teeth. And if the dog has a habit of eating things in the yard like rabbit droppings or other similar objects, that can cause a problem. If the dog licks certain things in the yard, there are other things that the dog might get into that might cause some odor.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah, I feed her vegetables sometimes, but I'm not sure if, like, kind of vegetables like broccoli and carrots and stuff. But not sure if that would affect it.
I doubt that vegetables are going to do that. It's a possibility. You can try eliminating a certain vegetable from the diet for a few weeks and see if the breath gets any better. But it's typically going to be meat type products or sugary type products that are more likely to contribute to the bacterial growth that causes the odor.
All right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Good luck, Stella. Bye bye.
Bye bye.
Gabby from Kansas City, Missouri emailed us. She writes, we rescued a pug in December. He and my younger cat play together. My older cat is having none of it. Is there anything I can do to help her get used to the dog, or should I just leave her be and give her time?
Well, if the dog is really bothering the cat, you really want to...
You can't tell from this.
Yeah, you want to intercede. And What I would do is keep them separate when you're not around to supervise. And one thing you can do is teach the dog to come on command. You really work on the recall. So if there's some kind of interaction that's a problem, you can call the dog away from the cat. Keeping both of them busy with toys that are made for cats or dogs that when they're rolled around, little treats come out, will help out.
Okay. Let's go to Abby from Leawood. Abby, you're on with Dr. Hunhausen. Turn your radio down if you would. Our number, 816-235-2888. Abby, welcome. We just lost Abby. Okay. Let's talk a little bit about something else, Wayne, about teaching pets where to do their business, just because we haven't talked about this one for a while. I'm guessing that teaching pets where to do their business is a little bit more of a time-consuming task than a lot of people want to acknowledge.
Yeah. Probably the most common question I get about this is that somebody wants their dog to go in a specific area of the yard. And it can be time consuming. It can be a really big challenge if we're talking about an adult dog. This, again, is something you start out with as a puppy. Mm-hmm. To get it done, what you do is you take the dog to the area you want it to eliminate in, let's say the far corner of the yard, and you're probably going to have to take the dog out on a leash every time so it doesn't scoot off someplace else and go. Take it out to that area. If it starts to go, calmly praise it. And then right when it finishes in the corner of that yard, give it a small, really tasty treat. And you do this over and over and over again until you reinforce that habit of going to a specific area and eliminating. And then you need to keep that area cleaned up enough, because if you don't clean up and it starts basically builds up there, then the pet's just going to go someplace else. So you need to keep that area clean too. But it's really that simple. Go to the same place every single time with the pet. Never let it go anyplace else in the yard, because you're always supervising or staying with it or having on a leash and then rewarding the behavior outside. And it's a matter of time.
I was going to say, you've said before you wanted your pet to distinguish between various services and to choose one as a specific way to, you know, a service for eliminating, mm-hmm. you know, at that time. You know, it sounds easy, but you're saying repetition is the key here.
Repetition is the key.
Yeah.
Now, and what you talked about before in regular house training, when you're doing house training, what you simply do is you're teaching the dog to distinguish between one type of surface that you want it to go on, like grass, and other surfaces you don't want it to go on. And it's the same type of process, getting the dog out to the yard frequently, not letting it go on any other surface like carpeting or tile inside, and then until the dog learns to go on just one surface. In this case, we're even more specific. It's going to go on one surface in one area of the yard.
It's important, I've heard you say, too, to get your dog outdoors to do its business after it eats or drinks. I mean, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Is there another time you might want to, a regular time you might want to set up with your...
Yeah, good question. Especially with puppies, there are key times the pet's likely to eliminate. So within a reasonably short time after eating, drinking a large amount of water, after a period of heavy play, some pets will need to eliminate. And certainly you want to do that before confinement and after confinement. So those are the main times you really want to get that dog outside.
Let's go back to some calls here and go to Michael from Olathe. Michael, you're on Up to Date. Our guest today is Dr. Wayne Hunhausen. Good morning.
Good morning.
Go ahead, Michael.
Yeah, so we have an adult female cat, and we wanted to claw her because she likes to scratch around the house and on couches. And we're not sure if it's going to have erratic behavior or if she's going to lash out in any ways as far as go to the bathroom around the house, or if it's going to hurt her as far as health-wise, if there's any kind of issues we should be worried about.
What's the age of the pet?
She is a 4-year-old. Maybe five. She might be around 5 years old.
Okay. Is her weight normal, or is she overweight?
She's normal, and she's an inside cat. She's deaf, so we keep her inside.
Yeah. The earlier you declaw, the less the more comfortable it is for the cat, and the more quickly they recover. That said, before we'll consider declawing, we'll provide the family with the information to try to get the cat to use a scratching post. And some cats will, some cats won't. But if you want to try and do that, then you keep the cat confined to an area where it's unlikely to scratch anything important, you know, where it has a scratching post. And then whenever you're home, the cat's out, they have some freedom. And then whenever it approaches the scratching post, it gets a small treat. If it scratches, it gets a large treat to really shape that behavior. And then during that time, you have to guide it away from other pieces of furniture. And so draping some plastic over the area where the cat scratches, or there are little motion-activated alarms you can put where a cat scratches to teach them to avoid that piece of furniture. There are a number of things like that that can be done to be real helpful. As far as behavioral problems after declawing, there have been a few studies because people are concerned that removing the cat's front claws might make it more aggressive and may use its teeth more, or might cause it to start house soiling. And the studies that I've looked at didn't support that. And although that said, if a cat has painful paws, you might in a small number of cats, I would still suspect maybe there'd be a short term problem with using the box until the claws were more comfortable. The pain medication available post declaw for cats is much better than what we'd used in the past. And so that's something you would want to talk to your veterinarian about controlling the pain. We have an article on our website for destructive behavior in cats, and I'd be happy to try to do more research if you need it and provide more information to hopefully avoid that, the expense of that surgery, and the pain that's associated with it.
Okay.
Okay, yeah, that's perfect. And you said short-term not using the box, so that's something that if we did go that route and she decided not to use the box, we could get her back to the box.
Yes, you should be able to. And what I would recommend post-surgery is the cat's confined to a small room with its box, like maybe a large bathroom. And in a smaller area, cat's more likely to use its box than it has run of the house. And it's also good for the cat post-surgery because it's going to be less active.
Gotcha. Okay. Perfect.
All right.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Michael. Let's go to Jennifer from Olathe. Jennifer, good morning to you.
Good morning. I have a little over 7 month old, I believe she's a Portuguese water dog mix, and I've been fortunate enough to be able to have her have play dates every day with my neighbor's dog, and then I take her to the dog park. But what I find is that if I don't have a play date with her, she has a bark, a high-pitched bark that is, I mean, numbing. And and it has to do with, I think, that she's not getting the attention she needs. And I don't know if I'm overstimulating her by having 3 or 4 days a week, having her running for 4 or 5 hours, or if I should limit that so she can get used to the fact that sometimes she's not going to be running for 4 or 5 hours.
Right. Is she barking at you for attention, or you mean when you leave her alone, she barks and bothers the neighbors?
She barks at me. She's got two different barks. She's got the "I'm going to protect you" deep primal bark, and then she's got the high-pitched "why aren't you paying attention to me" bark. She does bark when she's outside occasionally. She wants to sleep outside all the time. So if it was up to her, she'd be sleeping on her ergonomic bed literally around the clock.
Okay. For unacceptable attention soliciting behaviors like barking or whining, the first thing you have to consider is that you've got to be careful not to reinforce it. And so if she does that and you give her any feedback whatsoever, you say something nice to quiet her, you scold her, in some cases even just turning around and looking at the pet that's doing that, you'll reinforce the behavior. And so if it's mild, then you just look away from the pet until it stops, or you just abruptly get up and walk away from the pet to stop it. If it's real serious where you can't ignore it, a couple things you can do. You can interrupt the behavior. There are products that you can buy that produce loud hissing noises and have pheromones in it, like Interostop. We use that sometimes for pets that are having that problem. You can use a high shrill whistle, like a hiker's emergency whistle, to interrupt the barking behavior. But there are a number of products that can be used to interrupt it. The worst thing you can do is get to a point where you say, "Oh, I can't stand it anymore," and then you give the pet a treat or you pet it on the head, and then you've just shaped louder and louder barking.
Yeah, right.
And that one other thing, though, that I would do is providing for the pet's needs is really important. People just kind of concentrate on corrections. But if the pet is not getting what it needs on that day, it didn't get the exercise or the mental stimulation needed on that day, I would get my Kong toys out and the other toys that these round toys that dog rolls around and treats come out when they roll them out, and I'd give the pet things to do throughout the day. Just like a child on a snow day, maybe it's too much snow, it can't go outside, it can't go to school, and it's really bothering you, you'd give the child maybe a video game or a coloring book or a doll or something to keep it busy so it wasn't annoying you. The same approach can be taken with your dog.
Now, does she have treats? She's got more toys than I have in my home.
Uh-huh.
Should I keep some of those Kongs not in the backyard for her to play with all the time and just bring them out as special treat then?
She could have the Kongs all the time, but for these special needs, that's when I would load them with something really special, like maybe some Cheese Whiz, a little bit of canned dog food. Yeah.
Well, Jennifer, thank you for the phone call. And Dr. Hunhausen, you handled a whole boatload of them again. Thanks so much for answering so many questions, and thanks for your time.
Great. Good questions today.
You bet. Mm-hmm. That's Dr. Wayne Hunhausen. He's with the Westwood Animal Hospital.